This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening.
Well, I must tell you, my friends, you who have waited faithfully for the punchline of this speech.
Exactly a week ago, the world was waking up to the shock that the UK had voted unmistakably to sever its ties with the European Union. Today, a week later, politics in London shows no sign of recovery. The loser on the Brexit referendum, Prime Minister David Cameron, wasn't anticipating resigning when he started his Remain campaign. Boris Johnson, former mayor of London, after being the champion of leaving the EU, apparently never really lined up supporters in case of a victory. And yesterday, he pulled out of the running to lead the Conservative Party.
Having consulted colleagues and in view of the circumstances in Parliament, I have concluded that person cannot be me.
Another shocker, revealing that the once rising star Johnson's best talent seems to have been alienating people. Now the attention turns to Justice Minister Michael Gove and Home Secretary Theresa May. And meanwhile, as the UK staggers about looking for a future, the EU is vigorously trying to publicly assert its relevance and power, even without the UK as a member. David O'Sullivan is the ambassador for the EU to the United States. He's one of those so-called faceless bureaucrats who were so demonized by the Leave campaign. He argues the anger toward the EU is fundamentally misplaced.
Firstly, I think that the criticisms of the way the EU functions, I get and I understand. But people, I think, forget too quickly that the European Union is essentially governed by our member states. The bureaucracy in Brussels, which, by the way, is not much bigger than the size of the city council in Birmingham or of a medium-sized German city, exists to implement the wishes of our people. So, respectfully, I don't think that Europe is run by a technocracy or a bureaucracy. It is run by democratically elected representatives of the people.
You know, I'm in America. You know, I don't need convincing, but you can't blame this on Cameron not explaining it well enough to the people. I mean, could you survive a referendum in every one of the EU member countries if it was held next month?
Well, firstly, not all our countries believe that referenda are the best way to settle political issues. To your point about the UK referendum campaign, respectfully, I don't wish to personalize this to Mr. Cameron, but it is not easy if you have been criticizing Europe frequently and loudly down through the years, suddenly in the course of a 6 weeks referendum campaign to explain to people that actually Europe is very good for you. These are complex issues. We're living through difficult times. There's a general sense of malaise in the European population, as there is here, that somehow our systems are not delivering for ordinary people in the way they once did. We should not run away from that discussion. But honestly, to start blaming the European Union as the source of all these problems, in my view, is to mistake the nature of the problem, and more importantly, to turn to solutions which will actually make things worse. I don't think the United Kingdom is going to be a better place as a result of leaving the European Union. And I fear this is what will be demonstrated in the next few years if this turns out to be the case.
Boy, if it's not demonstrated, then you really have an issue of not negativity, but just relevance, which is perhaps even worse.
Well, I mean, I to be clear, I don't wish the British people ill, but I do believe that economic performance is stronger for countries who have joined the European Union than for those who have not. If you look at Poland and how it has developed since the collapse of communism compared, say, to Ukraine, which did not join the European Union, you can see a huge difference of trajectory. I think we don't necessarily do a good job of explaining that. And this is perhaps a moment of truth where we have to have an honest assessment. Do we really believe that this European Union delivers more benefits to our citizens than disadvantages? And I think we have to be willing to take on that debate. And frankly, I think if we do, we actually have a very good narrative.
All right, let me pretend to be a diplomat in the United States now and think about the implications of all of this. It feels as though, just from the perspective of Washington, D.C., why should I spend a lot of time thinking about Brussels? I'll make my own deals with France, Germany, and the U.K. It seems like the TTIP transatlantic trade treaty is out. That's going to have to be renegotiated on a bilateral basis. And, you know, Turkey, forget that. That's not going to happen.
If you don't mind my saying so, John, I hope your diplomats have a slightly more sophisticated understanding of the issues than you've just displayed.
I hope they do too.
Firstly, in terms of trade, why does the EU matter to the United States? The EU is one of the largest economies in the world. We're the largest trading bloc by far.
Why should I deal with Brussels and Paris? Why should I deal with
Because you can't. Because when it comes to trade, you can't deal with Paris. The trade deals are decided by the European Union, negotiated by the European Union. When you want sanctions against Russia, they are decided by the European Union, not by individual member states. The sanctions against Iran were decided by the European Union. So the European Union is a hugely important ally for the United States, both economically, commercially, and in terms of foreign policy and security. So these are all the reasons.
That's a very persuasive point, but from the U.S. perspective, doesn't the U.K.'s withdrawal here make those critical issues hard to deliver from Brussels?
I don't see why, because we will still be 27, a slightly smaller market, but still the largest market in the world and the wealthiest market in the world. Of course, it's more complicated if the UK leaves. That's why the Americans didn't want the United Kingdom to leave. We're now going to have to deal with a new situation, which is suboptimal. But I don't agree with you that the trade negotiations are going to stop. Both sides are determined to move forward with this deal, to conclude it this year if we can. We will see what is the relationship of the United Kingdom to that deal.
Can I just ask you? I mean, how worried are you about that deal with the Brits out and Donald Trump railing against trade deals over across the Atlantic?
Well, again, I don't want to comment on your domestic politics. I observe that trade is a difficult issue in this election. I also observe that the animosity in the trade discussion is rather more about the Trans-Pacific partnership than a deal with Europe. With the UK out, we don't know. For the time being, the UK remains in. If the UK leaves, the UK could also sign on to this deal, even if it were outside the EU. So I think we are going to have to adapt to the new situation, but the fundamental purpose of the European Union, its role in the world, its role in trade and commerce, and its vital interest to the United States in the transatlantic context, in my view, will remain.
All right. You've been very generous. And in listening to my unsophisticated diplomatic analysis here, but I do think that part of this debate is about the inability of voters to see some of the sophistication, which is so clear to you and others in Brussels. Don't you understand that trade deals feel to most voters, they feel like a situation where I elect my representatives, I elect my president. They say certain things about wanting to bring prosperity to me, but then they go off and do their own thing regarding these trade deals. And that represents austerity. It represents any number of things that infuriated the Brits, including making Polish people happy. How does this trade deal stop inflaming this sense of intolerance that's everywhere in the world right now? What is going to address that issue?
Well, let's try to unpack some of it logically. In terms of the general sense of public opinion about the benefits of trade or international activity, I agree. We need to do more to persuade people. But let's be very clear, John. The alternative policies which are being proposed are most likely to lead us to disaster. If we start shutting our markets, we will not become better off. We will become less well off. You talk about migration in the United Kingdom. The Poles and the Latvians and the Irish, by the way, who work in the United Kingdom, contribute massively. And the statistics on this are very clear. They are net contributors to the British economy. Now, does this create difficulties? Yes, it creates pressure on public services. The correct response is not to say, let's have fewer immigrants. The answer to this is to say, let's invest in building more schools. Let's invest in having a better healthcare provision.
Very eloquent, Ambassador. But do you have faith then that with all the nationalist voices rising in Europe, that those member countries can in fact do that, can in fact focus on those issues that you say will win the day?
You know, Karl Popper said that optimism is a duty. But more importantly, I actually have great faith in the common sense of the European people. And I believe that if we frame these issues in the right way, if we have the right kind of public debate, I think in the end, people will make the right choices. These are difficult times. There's a lot of anger out there. There's a lot of frustration after the crash of 2008. We should not minimize the legitimate sentiments of the vast majority of people who are not racist, who are not xenophobic, who are not ultranationalist, but who have concerns about the direction their society is moving in. And we should, in an open way, debate how best we can address these issues. But I don't believe that the extreme nationalist, xenophobic positions of many parties around Europe offer those kind of solutions. And I believe in the end, people will see through these false promises.
David O'Sullivan is the ambassador of the European Union to the United States. He spoke with us from Washington, D.C. Thank you so much, Ambassador.
Thank you, John.